New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Understanding cost segregation. That's today's episode. Let's dive into it. Hey, everyone. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And this is the Investing in Real Estate show, Freedom Fighters. We focus on building passive income, financial freedom. That's the whole goal of this podcast. And the vehicle that we use is buy and hold real estate. The whole point of it is to get you to be able to spend more time with your family, focus on the things that really matter in your life. And again, the vehicle that we use is buy and hold real estate. And a really incredibly important piece of buy and hold real estate is the tax advantages, the depreciation. It's one of the best tax shelters available for wealth building in the United States. And we've got an expert on the show today to dive into a topic that we've skirted around and talked about a little bit here on the show. When we've had Tom Wheelwright on the show, we've talked a little bit about cost segregation, but we've never done a full episode and understanding exactly what this is. Natalie, what was really the impetus for us, you know, discussing and trying to get a handle on cost segregation?
Well, cost segregation is a tax strategy that you use when you own investment real estate, and it's a way to leverage depreciation over time in order to really maximize your getting in your tax write-offs and minimizing what you're sending to the government. But it's a complicated thing. And so, you know, we got to a point where we figured that we could start to use this. We've asked our tax accountants to do it in years past, but they weren't all that familiar with it. And so this year we really in earnest got serious about using our tax strategy to the fullest. And so that's why we asked our accountants over at Provision, can we start to do some cost segregation? And they said, yes, you can, but we don't do it. We're going to send you to the guy who they think is the guy. And so that's how we came across David.
Right. So David Brazell is a cost segregation expert that we are using right now to help us maximize our depreciation on our properties. He's a certified public accountant, and he runs the company Brazell & Associates. And we'll have links to all of that on our show notes page. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, so let's just start at a high level, like 30,000 feet, because I know this topic can be a little scary for people, a little overwhelming, but that's why we have experts like you to do it. So at a high level, what is cost segregation and how does it help real estate investors with their taxes?
As was mentioned a moment ago by Natalie, one of the tax advantages of real estate investing is the depreciation that which essentially creates a loss on paper, but not a loss from cash flow, which is exactly what anyone would want to incur. And what cost segregation does is it finds a way to further accelerate that depreciation, significantly front-loading it in the first year or in the first 5 or 6 years, and even in the first 15 years, over a building's normal life or depreciable life of 27 and a half years for residential rental property or 39 years for commercial property.
And what was the impetus for this? It's a fairly new, isn't it a fairly new law as I understand it?
No, actually, cost segregation was around back in the 70s and early 80s when the investment tax credit was in force. And then when the investment tax credit was repealed in the 1986 Tax Act, cost segregation kind of died. And then it resurrected about 10 years later with a court case, which was the big court case. It was the Hospital Corp of America, and it was decided in 1997 based on tax years from, I believe, back in the 80s, where in most cases within their cost segregation study, the court ruled in favor of the taxpayer. And that sort of brought back created the comeback of cost segregation. But even then, it was still slim pickings, because most of the people who were doing cost segregation back in the 70s and early 80s were already out of it. So it slowly started to come back beginning in 1997 after that case was decided.
So, you know, at a very simplistic level, what you do when you take a cost segregation of an investment is you break it down into the sum of its parts, right? Like cabinets and floors and all of that stuff. And then you depreciate those things piecemeal. And then you tell the IRS, we have decided that these things are worth this, and we will take this depreciation deduction on a sliding scale. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do, except by the sliding scale, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
I guess I mean just like I'm going to take a little this year and a little next year and, you know, like a different amount each year.
Well, actually, it's more like a lot in the first several years is really what it comes down to. It's a significant front load of depreciation that otherwise the taxpayer would have to wait 27 and a half years or 39 years to fully depreciate.
Okay. I understand then.
But yes, right. It's the components that you were alluding to, you know, such as cabinetry or carpeting, you know, certain types of floor covering, and then, you know, certain electrical systems, certain plumbing systems, things like that, that qualify to be depreciated over 5 years instead of the 39.
So I can see why just the regular, you know, I don't know, H&R Block type accountant can't do this, because they don't know, you know, the components of a house. You'd need to be someone who really understands not only real estate, but taxes. So it really is such a specialized skill.
Correct. I mean, it's at a point where even most CPA firms can't do it. And even certain aspects of it, I can't do. So I have an engineer who is someone who used to be a general contractor. So he was in the business of reading architectural drawings. And so what he does is he does the measuring and the cost estimating using construction cost index manuals to estimate the cost of the various components that we segregate. And then I do the rest. But in cases where there are no architectural drawings, I actually go on site and with my measuring equipment and measure the items that we're going to segregate and estimate the cost of.
So as we were talking earlier, you know, sort of like a diamond in the rough, it's hard to find. Like, we employ Provision for, you know, as our CPA firm. They don't even specialize in that, and you have to find a cost segregation expert. So how do you become a cost segregation expert? What sort of certifications or you know, programs do you need to go through in order to be a cost segregation expert?
Well, that's an interesting question, because as of now, there is no licensing requirement for it. The only thing the IRS does require is that essentially measuring the takeoffs from architectural drawings has to be someone who, in a sense, qualifies to do that. I don't qualify to do that, but my engineer does, because he was a general contractor. There is an outfit that is trying to create a licensing aspect But it hasn't happened yet where a license is required.
But also you need to be prepared to, let's say, tango with the IRS, right? Because I can claim some cost segregation on my tax returns this year and I know nothing about it, right? And if I never get audited, who cares? But then, you know, what we're doing is claiming a certain amount of depreciation and preparing ourselves for the IRS to challenge it. So if I did that and the IRS came back and said, how'd you come up with this? I'd be like, I don't know. But if I had you in my back pocket, I'd say, talk to David. And then all would be well.
That's right. Yeah. You can rely on an outside service such as mine. And then, yes, we would argue against the IRS on your behalf based on the study we did. That's exactly how it would work. And it would be more credible than if you just made up the numbers yourself.
Right.
And that has happened where the IRS has disallowed studies where numbers were just made up because they just decided, well, 20% of the total cost is going to be 5-year property and 25 will be 15-year property. And the IRS doesn't allow that.
So before, I guess, I mean, let's just start with, again, still at a high level, hiring a cost segregation expert, and that person then needs to go into, so you're hiring this cost segregation expert to come into the fold to look at your, you know, you've got 50 properties, you've got 100 properties, you've got some mix of multifamily and single families, et cetera. What does the cost look like for hiring a cost segregation expert to come in? And they have to fly in and look at your properties. This is not something you can just do over the phone, right?
Correct. The IRS does require that whoever's doing the study visit the property.
Okay. And how do they prove that?
It's written into the report that we visited the property, but also when I visit the property, I take photographs of it, of all parts of the property.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. So you have, you know, GPS, you know, built into the phone so it can show you were standing right there when you took it.
Right. Plus I could also show, you know, the airfare that I paid to go to that city.
Right. Today's episode is brought to you by Purple Mattresses. Let me ask you a question. Did you spend the night tossing and turning last night? I know I did. I've been waking up with a stiff neck lately and back pain. Not my low back so much, but man, up around my neck and shoulders. Holy smokes. It's, you know, my kids want to play. I turn one way and I'm like in pain. I'm like, what's wrong? Like, I didn't do anything. I didn't lift anything weird. It's just I slept badly on a bad mattress. So that's where Purple Mattresses comes in. Purple Mattress will probably feel different than anything you've ever experienced before because it uses this brand new material that was developed by an actual rocket scientist. And it was not like the memory foam that I'm used to. He used to sleeping on that memory foam and it's super hot also. That's annoying part because my wife will not let me turn up the air conditioning super high. And so she sneaks over in the middle of the night and turns it down. And so the memory foam makes me super hot. So the Purple Mattress feels very unique because it's both firm and soft at the same time. So it keeps everything supported while still feeling really comfortable. Plus it's breathable. So it sleeps cool. It ends up giving you the zero gravity feeling. So it works for any sleeping position. So if you're tossing and turning, you're a side sleeper, you're a back sleeper, you're a stomach sleeper, it doesn't matter. And what's great about Purple Mattress is they're going to give you a 100-night risk-free trial. And if you're not fully satisfied, you can return your mattress for a full refund. They have a 10-year warranty on it too, free shipping and free returns. And they'll even do free in-home setup, and they'll take care of your old mattress and get rid of it. So you're going to love Purple Mattresses. And right now, our listeners will get free sheets and a free mattress protector. And with your mattress purchase. That's fantastic. So you get a free sheet set and a free mattress protector that goes over top of it. All you need to do is go to purple.com/investing. So the website address, you have to use the word investing. purple.com/investing. That's purple.com/investing. And you're on your way to a better night's sleep. Thanks, Purple. Okay, and so what does the cost look like to do that? I mean, it's not cheap, right? And if it's not something you just want to do if you don't sort of qualify for cost segregation. It's not something that every investor who's listening right now is going to do. This is certain circumstances, which we will get into in a moment. But what does the cost look like?
That varies based on the size and scope of the work involved. The lowest that I've ever done a study for of a property that is not, say, a duplicate of another property is probably about $1,500, and that would be for like a small single family dwelling. I've done studies as large as $45,000, which was like some 800 or 900 unit apartment complex, where they had no architectural drawings to show their landscaping, and it was in San Antonio, Texas, where it's very lush, and we had to count every single shrub and tree and whatnot. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that just sounds
no less.
That sounds so tedious, but
yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some of those items, and we'll get into which properties would qualify for this, or when you would want to call David to start to do this for your taxes. So what items would qualify? You're talking about shrubs. I mean, I'm you don't have to go through every laundry list item, but I mean, I'm sure people are sitting there saying to themselves, okay, what items in my house would qualify, in my rental property would qualify for this?
Okay. Well, starting with the shrubs, everything that's outside that is attached to the ground in some way where removing it would be somewhat cumbersome, such as concrete, sidewalks, drives, asphalt paving, landscaping, all that kind of stuff, covered parking, you know, whatever, that all qualifies as 15-year land improvements. So it's depreciated over 15 years. And it gets 150% declining balance to go with it. So it even further front loads it versus the 27.5 for residential rental or 39-year for commercial property. Things inside, it depends on what they are. So, for example, when it comes to floor coverings, carpeting qualifies as 5-year property. Or 7-year property in the case of anything in an office, just a basic office, is going to be mostly 7-year property as opposed to 5, even though both are considered in the tax code as what's called personal property. So carpeting, vinyl floor covering, linoleum floor covering, those kind of floor coverings will qualify. Flooring that does not qualify would be ceramic tile, terrazzo. Wood floor would not qualify if it was sitting on top of rafters. In other words, where it is the floor itself, and if you removed it, there would be no floor. Electrical, this is where the big segregation comes in, is things like certain electrical systems will qualify, such as to power ceiling fans or to power your kitchen appliances. If it's specialty lighting, or I should say secondary lighting. So every room is deemed to have what's called primary lighting, and the primary light source is considered part of the building. So it would be depreciated along with the building. But if you have, let's say a restaurant has extra down lights over each table, that would be more of a business purpose as opposed to a building purpose. And so the electrical system powering those lights would qualify as 5-year property.
So let's say you just bought an investment property and then you paid for a moderate rehab. You spent around $60,000 on a single family home. And so you have purchased all of these things, the plumbing and the flooring and all of that stuff. So then because you purchased them this year and then you're accelerating your depreciation, can you give me some kind of let's say on a $50,000, rehab, and then you cost segregate all of that. Like, can you, just so that our listeners get an idea of like, wow, is this all really worth it? Like, how much would that then, how much could you claim? I know that's a very generic question, yes, but just to give people the nugget.
Well, and I know it's generic, David, because I mean, like, you could have hardwood floors and that wouldn't qualify, but let's say you put down like vinyl flooring, right? So, which is what we would do in a lot of our properties. And I was hitting it when you were saying flooring, I was saying to myself, that's great because we're putting a lot of this like vinyl floor. We're not putting down terrazzo tile, not putting down ceramic tile for ridiculous costs. We're putting down the durable stuff that's going to be, need to be replaced in a few years.
And good for pets too.
Right.
Yeah. The laminate flooring is all the rage now in the last 5 or 10 years. I'm seeing it everywhere. And that would qualify because it's easily removable.
Okay, so carpet and vinyl floor, easily removable. But so if you had, like, let's just say a generic 1,000-square-foot, 900-square-foot home, you know, vinyl, maybe let's just use for round numbers here to Natalie's question, 3-bedroom, 1-bath, vinyl flooring, you know, basic lights, you know, like a globe light on the ceiling, you know, in each of the bedrooms. Maybe you've got some ceiling fans. I don't know. You've got some landscaping. You've got a front porch that's maybe a slab front porch with steps. You know, very, very basic middle America working class neighborhood property. What would that look like? I mean, in a cost segregation, would it be entirely worth it? Or again, would it be sort of a case-by-case basis?
It would be a case-by-case basis, and what also has to be factored in is how many do you have? Because, you know, I'm in Arizona, and if I have to fly to the East Coast and rent a car and stay in a hotel and all that for one night, you know, obviously that adds to the cost of what I have to charge you as well. To where property that's that small, it would probably be borderline if he had only one of them. If I was going out to do 5 of them, that would obviously then create some economies of scale. Then it would be worth it.
Right. I remember Tom Wheelwright saying that, you know, doing 1 rental property or 2 rental, but when you start getting into 10, 20, 30, 40 rental properties, then it's an entirely different animal, right?
Correct. Yeah. And also what often happens is I'll get, a contract to do, one or two, somewhere like, Atlanta, for example. And then by sheer luck, someone else from an area close by also wants a study done, and I'll do all of them at the same time and then split the cost of the travel amongst the various taxpayers.
Oh, good to know. So any other Indiana investors should know that we're going to send you out soon to our properties. So write us if you want to do this. But also, I guess I don't mean to push you on this, but I remember the numbers in Tom's book when he talked about cost segregation were so jarring that I was like, how can we not do this? So, can you give us some kind of nugget? Like, if you had this, you would expect this amazing deduction in your taxation.
Well, okay. Like, for example, in the property that you just mentioned, so like a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house, 1,000 square feet with maybe a small front yard and backyard, you know, just the basic cost of doing that would probably be about $1,500. You know, assuming that it was local, if I have to travel, I have to account for a little bit of time there. Plus the cost of travel, you're probably looking at a benefit of about, $7,000 or $8,000. So it's still a reasonably good rate of return, but it gets better when the building and the property is larger, because it's not the increase in the cost is not commensurate with the increase in the size. It goes up a little bit, but then the benefit goes up even more, based on the size and scope. And also, the more specialized the property, the better it will do. So in the case of, say, commercial property, a restaurant will do much better than an office based on the same square footage.
Why is that?
Well, because there are more things in a restaurant that will qualify as 5-year property than there would be in an office. An office is going to be more bare-boned. You know, it might have qualifying flooring and a few other things, but a restaurant's going to have all that kitchen equipment that needs to be powered and plumbed to, as well as the downlights over the tables. And, you know, they might have other things going on in there that you won't find in an office.
What's the most unique property you've ever done?
I would say probably a winery.
I was just about to ask you, have you ever done a winery? That's amazing that you just said that, because
I was thinking amusement park.
Well, how do you even start there? We were out at a winery, Natalie and I, just a few months ago, and I was so struck by, here was this like really high-end winery, you know, each bottle is like, you know, in the 40s or so, fantastic, by the way. in Edna Valley, in California, and in all the different bathrooms and everything, they use the same vinyl flooring that I use in my rental properties. It's like the same exact pattern. I was like, this is a high-end winery. They're using the same vinyl flooring that I use in my rental properties. And so if it's good enough for a winery, it's good enough for me.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
That's great. Yeah. So what did you find when you were at the winery? Was there anything weird or that you could account for there? I mean, I guess each vine?
Oh, no. The vines, that would be paid for separately by them, so it would be accounted for separately. Therefore, they wouldn't need us to do anything with the vines. But it would be basically the property itself, you know, the land improvements as well as the various things inside the building. And one of the things that was so strange was that there's this thing called a wine cave. And so when I was doing this study of property in the Napa Valley area, where the building was built up against the side of a mountain, and then the cave was built into the mountain. And I don't know why the tax code allows this, but for some reason, the construction of that cave is considered personal property. It's not even considered a land improvement. It's personal property, which gets 7-year treatment in a winery. That was very expensive.
Let me just ask you, when I made some notes here, when you were talking about flooring and then the outside of the property, you know, often I'm thought of that land does, you can't depreciate land, right? So the benefit of owning real estate is in your ability to depreciate it. When you own raw land, you don't get the tax benefits that you do from owning real estate.
Correct.
You mentioned a few things with the outside of the property, shrubs and different things. How does that – it seems like that's a little bit of a gray area though, right?
No. Any kind of landscaping is going to qualify as a land improvement. The only kind of landscaping that we don't deal with, we leave it as part of the land, is if it is natural, it was already there, and it's not close to the buildings. So, you know, I've done apartment complexes such as, you know, like up north in Flagstaff, where it's very forested. And so if there's like forest area around the edge of the property that was obviously natural, it was always there, we don't count that.
Gotcha.
But if they planted it, we do. Or if it's natural, but it's close to the building, then we'll take that as because there's value to it.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, thanks for clearing that piece up. What are some of the other thresholds of measurement that tell you that cost segregation is right for you? You know, if someone's listening, they've got 5 rental properties. You know, is there some sort of a threshold? Someone might be sitting there scratching their head wondering if they should pull the trigger on this.
Pretty much any property will find that the result of a study will be greater than the cost. However, the big caveat is that the taxpayer has to be able to use the additional deductions that we get them. So if they're subject to the passive activity loss rules, to where any additional losses would just be suspended and carried forward, then they would not benefit from a study.
Could you explain that a little bit more deeply for people who, you know, maybe explain that to me at a 5th grade level. I get what you're saying. So in a way, if I can't claim that, if this isn't going to really help me in this particular tax year, then don't do it is what you're saying.
Because you only have so much passive loss you can claim if you make over a certain amount of money. So if you make too much money and you have too much passive loss, you just can't claim it, right?
Correct. Yeah. I believe the threshold's $150,000 of, I think it's modified adjusted gross income, if I remember correctly. And if your income is over that and you are subject to the passive loss rules, then if you do not have passive income against which to offset additional passive losses, then you won't be able to use them. those losses. They'll just suspend and can be carried forward until you can use them. And if you think you'll be able to use them in the next year or two or three, then it might still be worth doing. But if you don't know when you'll be able to use them, then I would recommend not doing a study in that case.
Okay, and I interrupted you. So that was step one, know whether your passive loss is worthwhile in doing it if you can actually claim it. What was the next thing you were going to say?
Another thing would be if you are incurring net operating losses, or if you're in a very low tax bracket. If you're in a, you know, if you're in the 10% or 15% tax bracket, it may not be worth doing. You want, you know, the bigger the higher the tax bracket you're in, the more valuable deductions are to you.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. We were seeing some different changes that Congress is grappling with right now. You know, what Trump is proposing, what you know, the Republican Congress is going back and forth and hemming and hawing about, and where we're going to go, who knows? Do you think that this will change your game at all?
Only margin is probably not at all, because what they're proposing is they want to get rid of the 3.8% net investment income tax on that was part of the Affordable Care Act, as well as the bringing the top tax bracket down from 39.6 to 35. So it would be a marginal difference. If they were to reduce the top tax rate from 39.6 down to 10%, then yes, that would probably put all of us cost segregation people out of business. Because what we depend on is the spread between that we're getting, or I should say not the spread. Well, the spread would matter if they were to reduce the life of a building. Like if they say 39-year for commercial property suddenly can be depreciated over 5 years, that would kill the cost segregation industry because nobody would need a study anymore. But as for tax brackets, the higher the tax bracket, then the more valuable the deduction is to the taxpayer. And so
absolutely. Yeah. So as Robert Kiyosaki says, taxes are an investor's biggest expense, or any entrepreneur, really. So this game is about, you know, trying to make sure that you are playing your cards the very best that you can.
Right. And that's exactly what depreciation does, is it gets you losses on paper, but not in cash flow.
I love that. That really is right there. That is the bottom line point right there, right?
Right. Right. Correct.
So how long does this take? Like if we sent you to Indiana next week to do like say 5 properties.
Your average single family dwelling site visit takes me about an hour and a half. So you're probably talking for 5 of them, probably I'd have to be there it would be over a day based on the fact that we're having shorter days now. And to do the site exterior, it's better to do that in daylight. So probably a little over a day.
And then you go home and you run your numbers. And
right. Then
so
I,
we
then
would
I
have
send
something to present to our CPA and how long?
Correct. I send the information over to my engineer. He has the construction cost index manuals, and he then will estimate the cost of the items that I'm telling him to segregate. Then I get that information back from him, and I put it into a meaningful report that then you would provide to your CPA.
Okay. Awesome. So this is something that, you know, you don't have to complete it by the end of, if we wanted to claim it on our taxes for 2017, you wouldn't have to go there in 2017. You could go in January and we could still use this information, right?
I could go there in early September. If you're, if it's owned by an LLC that files on September 15th after extending, you could go there then. Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as it's before you just need it before you need to prepare and file your tax return.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
So from first phone call to completion, what does a typical cost segregation look like?
Well, once we get the engagement, and if it's out of town, we have to book flights. I ask the taxpayer, do you want me to go right now, or do you want me to try to book a flight with a decent fare, which is typically at least 3 weeks out? Usually that's the case. So figure I book something for 3 to 4 weeks out. Once I go there and start the site visit. The turnaround time for a single family dwelling is probably less than 2 weeks in most cases, unless it's during, you know, February and March when everyone wants their studies, then it may take a little longer.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, we kept you over time, David. I think we had a lot of really interesting questions that we didn't know the answers to. And I think you really are going to be able to help our audience tremendously if they want to go down this route as they grow and get to 10 properties and they really start to think about mitigating their taxes with cost segregation. So thank you so much, David. I really appreciate it.
Sure. There's one other point I'd like to make that a lot of people are not aware of with cost segregation, and that is that it doesn't have to be done. Like you don't have to have done the study the year you purchased or built the property. That's the best time to do it, but we can do cost segregation studies on any property that's been placed into service by the current owner as far back as 1987.
Wow.
Now, for residential rental, that won't be applicable that far back because their property will already be fully depreciated. It'll have some effect for commercial property, but I just recently, just this past August, did studies of two apartment complexes where they placed them into service in 1996, and the benefit was still into six digits for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't wait to dive into these numbers. Thank you so much, David. Yeah. This is great stuff. Sure. And, we will have links to your website. If anyone wants to reach out to David, we'll have that contact information. Just go to our website, morrisinvest.com/podcast. And this is episode 272. So in the show notes page, we will have links on our page for David's info so you can connect with him. David, thanks so much. We really appreciate you being here.
Sure. Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing and pushing us up to the top of the iTunes charts. And thanks to Inc. Magazine for naming us as one of the top business podcasts in the world. Thank you for all of your support. We will publish another show next week. We'll be back here on Monday with a new episode of Investing in Real Estate. Until next time, everyone, go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. And then you get to do some of these advanced ninja tricks like David taught us today. We'll see you next time, everyone.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.